Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 1162 of the Juice Box Podcast. Today, Jenny and I finish up the Grand Round series with something I'm calling hodgepodge because it's kind of all of the questions that were left plus some conversation. If you're a doctor who's listened to this, I hope it helped. Please share it with someone else and reach out to me. I'd love to have you on the show. Nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group, Juice Box Podcast, type 1 diabetes. But everybody is welcome. Type 1, type 2, gestational, loved ones, it doesn't matter to me. If you're impacted by diabetes and you're looking for support, comfort, or community, check out Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. Don't forget to save 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com. All you have to do is use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. That's JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% at CozyEarth.com. And go fill out that survey at t1dexchange.org/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the insulin pump that my daughter wears, Omnipod. Learn more and get started today with the Omnipod Dash or the Omnipod 5 at my link, omnipod.com/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. An implantable 6-month sensor is what you get with Eversense, but you get so much more. Exceptional and consistent accuracy over 6 months, and distinct on-body vibe alerts when you're high or low. On-body vibe alerts? You don't even know what that means, do you? EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Go find out. Jenny, this may be our last Grand Rounds episode for a bit, you and I.
I thought we were done. So well, it's kind of, great.
A buttoning up, we're going to call it. So we, hospital diagnosis, insulin, safety, food, CGM, BGMs, pumps, humanity, communication, management, pregnancy, school nurses. And what I have left is just marked on my list as this part will be long. I think it means more conversational. And then I'm actually going to do like a wrap up episode that I won't bother you for, where I'll just kind of like go over the high marks because it won't be any, you know, any conversation
and
back and forth.
And you're never bothering me, remember.
I know. Don't, but we have other things to do.
Never a bother.
My to-do goodness. List for Jenny's got other stuff on it. We got to keep moving.
Okay.
So I have this note here from someone that just says, I wish that they took more of a whole health approach with me instead of just viewing my diabetes as separate. I wish they understood that everything seems to affect my blood sugar and that diabetes is more than just my blood sugar being affected. I wish they understood that sometimes you can do everything right, but diabetes is still, everything doesn't turn out the way you want. Also, I have other health issues, other autoimmune issues, and that also affects my diabetes care. I wish they understood that because it's tiring. I wish they understood that I don't want to come in every 3 months, that that's not fun, that I hate waiting 45 minutes after my appointment time for them to spend 5 minutes with me and then not offer anything valuable.
Yes.
I wish they would run lab work in the office. I wish they would let me have the results without making me make, oh my God, a second appointment to get the results. Mm. And then when I get there, tell me you're so healthy, nothing's wrong. Do you have any questions?
That last bit about the labs. If I was going to restructure anything in terms of medical like visits, regardless of the condition that you're talking about, it would be that if you're coming in for a visit, labs will be done ahead of this visit. That's on the doctor to order then, right? I mean, the person with diabetes or whatever else needs to be evaluated, you know, health-wise for the person, sure, they should have an idea of what is kind of due or what hasn't been looked at in a while, but that's really on the doctor to have that order in. And then the person knows my appointment is March 1st. I need to go in the end of February. I need to get the labs done because then the second appointment isn't needed.
Yeah.
Saves and you everyone have something to discuss.
That's not a, right? That's not like a I don't want to say scam, but that's not like a billing thing, is it? Trying to get you in there twice?
I don't believe so. Yeah. I think it's not proper thinking about what would be most beneficial time-wise and to make the best use of the visit in terms of strategizing, right? And talking through what might be some of the things that we do need to address. Well, look, you know, cholesterol levels or A1C or vitamin D, they've changed. We've got something that we need to talk about here, right? If you have to come back, it's really annoying for the person whose life is now interrupted twice.
Yeah, every 3 months.
Right.
I'm kind of like baffled by how it's not obvious that a person in the office just takes the schedule every day, I don't know, 3 weeks in advance and calls somebody on the phone and says, hey, Jenny, you're coming in 3 weeks from now. Doctor's got the labs here for you. Where would you like me to send off the script? Go ahead and get that blood draw for us, right? You know, don't come in without that test.
Right.
It would take not much to do that, and then not much to get people accustomed to it as well.
And what do we have today? We have so much automation in systems. That doesn't even have to be a phone call.
Yeah.
That could be an online, like MyChart or whatever electronic medical health system you're using. That could absolutely be built into that electronic record system that visits here coincide with these type of labs.
Yeah.
The note gets sent to the person via email or text or through their online, you know, record portal. They get the notification and they're the ones that then they have to make the appointment to come in for the labs.
Right.
But at least it's a notification. It's the reminder to do so.
Yeah. Around here, labs are easy. You basically just walk into like a Quest or a LabCorp or something like that. You hold your script in the hand and that's that. Or my doctor sometimes just sends it electronically and you show up and you say, hey, this is my name. There should be orders in here for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But all the rest of it too, you got to hear what that person's really saying.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that other autoimmune impacts management, that blood sugar is not the whole thing. Like those little, like that seem like little things. If you really listen to the way this person lays this out, this is the entirety of their struggle right here. You know, like just if you could just understand these concepts and not, I'm guessing, fight me on them all the time, all the way. You make my life better, not just this appointment better.
I mean, what I honestly hear is the fact that anyone caring for somebody with diabetes, it's a whole picture look. But what it makes me really consider is that they need to listen to the variables episode. Really? Yeah. Like, listen to all the things that in a day could have impact, including many other health conditions, whether it's thyroid or it could be any other autoimmune conditions that may have an impact on energy levels or sleep or other medications that you're taking that may impact the way that your insulin or other medications for diabetes, then there are many, many layers, right, to evaluate. And it isn't just blood sugar.
Right. Well, here's some more stuff. Today's podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. Boasting a 6-month sensor, the Eversense CGM offers you these key advantages: distinct on-body vibe alerts when high or low, a consistent and exceptional accuracy over a 6-month period, and you only need 2 sensors per year. No longer will you have to carry your CGM supplies with you. You won't have to be concerned about your adhesive not lasting, accidentally knocking off a sensor, or wasting a sensor when you have to replace your transmitter. That's right, there's no more weekly or bi-weekly hassles of sensor changes, not with the Eversense CGM. It's implantable, and it's accurate. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. The Eversense CGM is the first and only long-term CGM. Eversense sits comfortably right under the skin in your upper arm, and it lasts way longer than any other CGM sensor. Never again will you have to worry about your sensor falling off before the end of its life. So if you want an incredibly accurate CGM that can't get knocked off and won't fall off, you're looking for the Eversense CGM. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Today's episode of the Juice Box podcast is sponsored by Omnipod. And before I tell you about Omnipod, the device, I'd like to tell you about Omnipod, the company. I approached Omnipod in 2015 and asked them to buy an ad on a podcast that I hadn't even begun to make yet. Because the podcast didn't have any listeners, all I could promise them was that I was going to try to help people living with type 1 diabetes. And that was enough for Omnipod. They bought their first ad. And I used that money to support myself while I was growing the Juicebox podcast. You might even say that Omnipod is the firm foundation of the Juicebox podcast. And it's actually the firm foundation of how my daughter manages her type 1 diabetes every day. Omnipod.com/juicebox. Whether you want the Omnipod 5 or the Omnipod Dash, using my link lets Omnipod know what a good decision they made in 2015 and continue to make to this day. Omnipod is easy to use, easy to fill, easy to wear. And I know that because my daughter has been wearing one every day since she was 4 years old, and she will be 20 this year. There is not enough time in an ad for me to tell you everything that I know about Omnipod, but please take a look. Omnipod.com/juicebox. I think Omnipod could be a good friend to you, just like it has been to my daughter and my family. This is going to be a nice hodgepodge episode. I like this. This person just says, I wish they would acknowledge that this takes an entire team, not just me, to take care of. You know, no one should be discharged from a hospital without all their follow-up appointments handled with their diabetes educator, a registered dietitian, probably a mental health professional, this person says. Continually reassessing readiness to learn. A patient coming to you with questions about things they have read or heard, those people are ready for a deeper dive, right? That's why they're coming to you and saying these things. They want to be more empowered. This is your opportunity to do that for them. Treat this patient as though they are the primary member of this healthcare team. I like that idea. Like, we're a team, but you're the leader as the person with diabetes.
Right.
They should have input on their treatment plan. This is what I have found helpful during the 24 years that I've dealt with this for both my son and now myself. Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah. If you're, I don't have anything to say about that other than if you're a doctor and you were treating the person like, you know, a microphone in the room that just is listening to you and they're not really part of it. I think that's the outcome you're going to get most times is people feeling disconnected and unheard.
What I also hear kind of behind that is in being heard, you have to analyze from the person and say, are they ready for the next level, right? You have to know where they are, what they're talking about, where they're asking to get to, because if they're at, you know, starting step number two, and they really want to know answers that are really like ninja level, right? You have to say, okay, we need to get to that, but we're kind of right here. We need to address this first. We need to move up here. We need to inch forward and so that you really can grasp what you want to know about, because that's a level of understanding and application of medication adjustment and whatnot that you're not really at yet with what I see happening.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, just because this person says, just because someone has bad numbers in quotes, doesn't mean they aren't trying their best.
I hate that word.
I do too. But like, this is this person's experience, right? They feel like I'm coming in there with numbers that somebody's judging as not being good, but I am trying and I'm trying sincerely, right? She's like, sometimes I screw things up, but sometimes I just don't know what I'm doing.
Sure.
Sometimes I just get the math wrong. Sometimes the Chick-fil-A gives us regular Dr. Pepper instead of diet.
Right.
Sounds like a personal remembrance.
Yes.
When I get to my appointment, I am also not going to remember that 2 months ago, Chick-fil-A gave me regular Dr. Pepper instead of diet. So don't ask me about that.
Right.
Anyway, this never goes away. There are going to be awful days and, you know, you got to do better at it. It does get easier, but you have to, as a doctor, appreciate the journey that it takes to go from, you know, being diagnosed, not probably be given, having, you know, gotten great direction, living through it day to day when you don't know what you're doing, eventually, hopefully figuring it out. And then the diet Dr. Pepper comes for you. And now this doctor goes, hey, what happened here? What's this?
Right.
You know, and that feels terrible after being through that whole thing.
And I think that might be that picking apart component, you know, what happened here 2 months ago. I think it's the clinician's way to try to get into some type of education about what could have been done differently. It's never really asked in the right way. It's always asked in a sense of the person with diabetes feels like they're being like blamed. Like, what did you do here? Right. When the person's like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no clue what happened there. In that sense, it's more the broad picture of what are we looking at? What trends, what sticks out? And can you remember anything about what kind of sticks out that you didn't really want to happen? And if not, then again, it's more generalized. Mm-hmm.
This next person makes such an interesting statement. She says, look, a lot of people in the US and probably other places too, struggle to pay for their supplies. I'd love a pump. I'd love a CGM. I really would, but I can't afford it. So now, you know, I'm struggling financially. You're coming to me with here, buy these things that you can't afford. I can't afford them. That's hard for me. Then I get treated like, well, I'm not interested in my care.
Right.
And then, and this is a quote, then you put me on that, wait, then the docs are going to get us all killed with their stupid type 2 style management that they give people on MDI.
Oh, no.
So, right. So that's this person's comment. So obviously what happened was somebody said, hey, get this. And she said, I can't afford that. And they were like, oh, you're not serious about this then. Just, you know, here, some Levemir and, you know, be on your way.
And I will also say that team, that clinical team, doesn't know a lot about the products and right. what is available for people who have less or don't have good insurance coverage mm-hmm. or can't afford, because a lot of the different companies have programs to assist.
Yeah.
So, and the doctors should know that.
That's the problem with everybody being so siloed all the time, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the doctor's like, hey, get a pump. And you go, I can't afford it. And they're, okay. And they just move to the next. They don't say, oh, did you know that, you know, this company has an access program or,
right.
you know, they have everyone I've ever been involved with or heard about has access programs.
100%.
Everybody.
And I will guarantee that if they are being visited by a rep from any of the companies, they have been told about the access programs.
Yeah.
10 years ago, when I was working with an endocrine practice, our reps that came in consistently gave us information about the access programs
yeah.
and the discounts and the little discount cards or codes or whatever was available.
Right. And some of them are significant, by the way.
Yes.
Like I've seen like $500 items reduced to $20 with a coupon. Like, you know, so again, but that's almost only half of the problem. The first part is you should have helped her find out how to do this. And
correct.
When you couldn't figure it out or didn't want to figure it out, why do you relegate her to like second class status as far as her management goes? And if I'm going to add on one for me, you could have still taught her how to take care of herself with MDI because plenty of people do it well, but
correct.
They also know how to use insulin. So
yep.
then you have to educate. Like it's a, you know, it's an if this, then that series. Oh, by the way, going back to another thought here, it doesn't mean they would have gotten good direction even if she could have afforded a pump, because this person says, I work in an ICU and my kid has type 1 diabetes, so I'm aware of this enough that I was paying attention on the day that a person came in DKA in their early 20s. The endo had put them on an Omnipod 5, so an algorithm-based pump.
Okay.
But they were using Libre because Dexcom wasn't covered.
So they couldn't do the algorithm.
But the person signed up for the whole thing because they wanted the automation. My God.
Did they think that they were getting automated delivery because they had a system and a CGM and
yeah,
they didn't?
Jenny,
nobody told them?
Yeah, you got it. There you go.
Oh my God.
Kids running around in automated. The kid's running around in automated and the pump's not talking.
And is not
CGM,
getting any?
Which is how he ended up in DK. So anyway, scrolling on.
Oh.
I wish they would have told me. I wish they would have known that I would have been willing to go much farther. This is a motivated person. I'm an adult who doesn't mind injections. I would have diluted insulin if I needed to. I would have used vials and syringes. I would have been willing to finger poke 20 times a day. I just didn't know about any of that until I found this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that half unit pens with 4 needles and 6 test strips was all I needed to stay healthy. Wow. How about that?
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to say. I mean, even for somebody who, let's say they really can't afford a CGM, even with all of the stuff, test strips can be written as a script for plenty a day.
Mm-hmm.
Even the generic ones, which are good enough to give you enough information to go by through the course of the day, with MDI, you can absolutely make it work.
Yeah, no, for sure.
You just have to have somebody guide you through that.
But that person's statement is more about saying that vial, syringes, and a couple of test strips a day was all I needed. That means that they were told, shoot this, inject this at a meal, check every once in a while, which, by the way, doctors have the funniest way of having you check your blood sugar in this scenario when it's going to be the best.
Of course.
So that, yeah, that's always fascinating. Like, look, you're good. But, you know, maybe you wouldn't think to test yourself 2 hours prior to see that you're 300 after the meal and then it came back down again, right?
Right.
It's really something. This person goes on to say, I'm just compelled to send this in because I didn't realize that I was being set up with bare minimum to survive. Like, I actually thought I was out there just killing it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's sad. So,
and in this day and age, bare minimum, that person's bare minimum was what it was eons ago. Mm-hmm. When that was the standard, that there was nothing different to be able to do. So the fact that people are being told this bare minimum at this point with the technology and the programs that are available to be able to get and use things appropriately, that's really sad.
Yeah. Let's see. I wish my doctor knew that you can have, you know, quote unquote, non-diabetic A1Cs without being consistently low. Every time I have an A1C under 6, this doctor scours my Clarity report looking for lows. And even if I have less than 1% lows, I get a warning about how dangerously I'm acting. With a 6, I don't even know what to say. I mean, you know, I'm going to get upset, Jenny. I'm trying not to. It's Friday. But if you are a doctor and you find yourself going, oh, I've done that, you really need to learn more so that you don't say stupid things to people. This person is having massive amounts of success and you're yelling at them about it. You know what I mean? That's crazy.
Yet on the opposite of that, the other really sad thing is that I wouldn't say endocrinology, but definitely more of the just general medicine, unfortunately, wouldn't even look at a problem with a blood sugar or with an A1C of 6.
Right. They wouldn't say, hey, maybe 5 is available to you. Right. No, they just, yeah.
Or maybe that's not in the range of somebody who doesn't have something going on with their blood sugar. It is being mismanaged if your A1C is 6 and you don't have a diagnosis of diabetes.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're thinking people would, oh, I see what you're saying. A regular GP is just going to be like a 6. That's 6. Fine. That's just Jesus coming for you one day, but it's not a problem today. Don't worry about it. You know that attitude, I mean, of like,
oh, yeah.
We'll watch it. We'll watch it. I had somebody the other day tell me, a doctor told him they were going to...
What are we watching?
Yeah. Like, oh, I know what we're watching. We're watching for me to fall over. I had a woman tell me the other day about her thyroid, and she said, I had my doctor tell me, we're gonna put a watch on this 5-TSH. I was like, a watch? I said, what are your symptoms? My hair's falling out. I'm tired. I can't get rested. My fingernails are breaking. I've lost my sex drive. I'm like, she like rattled off 10 things. She told the doctor, and the doctor goes, we're going to keep an eye on that. I kept an eye on it already. Help me.
Right.
Like, no. Yeah, it's same thing with the diabetes. Like a 6A1C, oh, you're all right. That's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This lady says, it would be really nice if we stopped acting like talking about the digestion of fat and protein for people using insulin was an advanced topic.
Oh, yeah.
I have been brushed off and treated as if I was an idiot for suggesting that fat and or protein could be impacting high blood sugars.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
Of course.
Yeah, we'll just say it again. If you're listening and you think, no, that doesn't impact type, you're wrong. So learn more.
Because it's all about carbohydrate.
Yeah.
I mean, in there, it is all about carbohydrate. Mm. So why would we need to talk about fat and protein? My soapbox to get on is that nobody is guided in how much they need in terms of portion. Just count your carbs and take your insulin and the other stuff, just eat it. Well, so I can eat a cow a day?
Right, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't affect my blood sugar. Like,
if you're a physician and you've got somebody in front of you who's type 1 who wasn't before, it might be, you know, instead of just complaining about it on social media or at dinner or whatever, bitching about it to yourself when you're driving home in your car that people don't eat well, why don't you say, hey, listen, this is a great time to go over this. Before type 1 diabetes, you were killing yourself very, very slowly. You wouldn't have even noticed it happen probably. And then one day you would have been like, oh, what's that feeling? Then you would have been gone. But now you have type 1, so we're going to pay really close attention to what you're eating. This is the part where I tell you that that is 6 portions, not 1 portion. You know, like that,
yeah.
Like that you don't need 6,000 calories a day, you know, like the, you know, that all this other stuff, and we're going to see it now in your blood sugar right away. Like, right. You didn't know before because you didn't have type 1, but now we're looking. Mm-hmm. What a great opportunity for you to make some adjustments here
right.
and be healthier beyond diabetes.
Right.
You know, but if I said that to a doctor, and I know this because I've done it, you're like, they're going to say to me, people don't listen. Which is like saying, I don't know what it's like. It's like saying that you're a half a mile from a cliff that no one can see. And you know it's there. And you see people walking and falling off the cliff. But you don't bother telling anybody, hey, slow down, there's a cliff coming. Because some people don't listen to you.
Right, or turn the other way. Don't go that way.
Let's make an adjustment now. But the bigger point is that, like, well, it's not worth me opening my mouth because they might not listen to me. First of all, what else are you doing? Isn't that your whole goddamn job?
Right.
Everyone's not going to listen. It doesn't mean it's not incumbent upon you to say it.
Right.
Also, this will seem disconnected, but parenting, same thing. You don't just get to say it once and it happens.
Oh, no.
It's your goddamn lifelong job to stand there and go, oh, my God, okay. Put that away. Right. This trash has got to go out. You can't leave that on the floor. Please don't hit your sister.
Right.
Like you don't just get to say that one time and it's over. Like, and if you think that, then I don't know what you expected when you became a doctor. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's much like, that's a very good connection. It's like being a parent who constantly has to tell your child, the underwear go in the thing right here, not on the floor in front of it. It goes in the basket, right? Or we don't leave toothpaste spit in the sink. We rinse it down right away.
We're not going to look at an 8A1C and go, hey, that's not so bad. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's not so bad if you're on your way to better, but if that's where you're going to live for the rest of your life, it's going to catch up to you pretty quickly. It's just.
Right. There's a lot of repeat.
And nobody talks about it that way. And I even, listen, I'll go out on a limb here and I'll even say, I understand that socially for the last couple of years, maybe we've drifted away from being honest with people all the time. Is that a fair way to say that? Like, we've been protecting people's feelings a little bit. Jenny is making a face because of, I know there's a private conversation we had recently that we can't talk about on here, but
no.
It's still your job. Like, you're not supposed to hurt people's feelings. You're not supposed to treat them poorly, but they deserve good information. They deserve tools and they deserve direction. Like, and if you have to repeat it over and over again, you don't just get to say, oh, here comes Scott. He don't listen. I'm not going to say it again. I'm still paying you.
Right.
You're in my insurance company's pocket. Do your job. You know what I mean? If I don't listen to you, it's on me. But come on. Like, I don't know. It's very upsetting, all this. There's no way any doctors are left listening to this, Jenny.
I really hope that they're, I mean, you know, if I was a clinician, I guess I know my personality. I am very much, if you've got something and I don't know much about it and I could do better, then I would rather sit here and be like, God, I was really wrong. Like, man, like, you know, I can do better. I can clean this up. I can turn this around. I can do better for whatever the job is that I have, I can do better, right? But that's the attitude I think anybody who's in healthcare should really have. What are you in this for? Mm-hmm. Are you in this to improve people's lives?
I did a recording this morning with a anesthesiologist who has been diagnosed with type 1 later in life. She's had it now for about 5 years. She came on to talk about what an anesthesiologist should know. And I'm actually going to make it part of this series, which it was terrific, right? And she was lovely and we had a great conversation. But at one point she said this thing that I hear people say all the time. She goes, well, you know, there's a lot of burnout in healthcare. And I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of burnout in factory work too. But you don't get to like not run the crane and pick up the piece of steel and put it where it goes because you're just sick of it. You know what I mean? Like, I actually said to her, these were my words, Jenny. I said, if people worked for me, you motherfuckers would be upset because I'd fire y'all. Like, I don't want to hear I'm burned out. What? You make over six figures. Go on vacation. like, I don't know. Take a walk. Smoke weed. Leave me out of it. Do your job. You know what I mean?
Or make changes in your organization. If you're burned out, that means that something in the organizational structure of your day-to-day schedule
is repeating or how and you're beating you up. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. It's beating you up so much that you're feeling burned out. And absolutely, that needs to be taken care of. But it doesn't mean that the people then that you're taking care of in your practice.
Yeah. Do you know that during that recording, I turned to a browser window. I opened up ChatGTP. Don't laugh for a minute, okay? And I said, please tell me what an anesthesiologist should know about how insulin pumps work and what how they should manage them during surgery. And it spit out something that I read back to her, and she goes, that's all accurate. So my point to her was, if people keep making the same mistakes over and over again, we just need one person to write down the rules. Maybe start an email chain, right? Like every day you guys get an email to remind you about people with type 1 diabetes and pumps, and this is it. Or people who come in with, hypertension. Like, here's the thing to remember. And she said, some people don't read their emails. I'm like, well, at what point is there going to be, like, when are we going to hold people to account to do their job? You know what I mean? And I get there's human failings, which I don't even mean in a pejorative way. Like, I understand there are limitations of people. But as an organization, I get if Jenny's tired on a Thursday or if I'm in a bad mood last week or something like that. But does the whole organization take a dive? Like, how does that happen? And it just seems like, I hate to say this. It just seems like laziness to me. I mean, am I being harsh? Like, I think what I said to her was, she's like, well, people have to come in and advocate for themselves, which I don't know how doctors don't hear. That should be insulting to them. Like that I'm so bad at my job, someone has to come in and remind me of what it is when I get there.
That I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, but I said, like, I don't go get 4 new tires and remind the guy when I drop off my keys to put the lug nuts back on. I just assume that's going to happen. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, do I have to assume a doctor's not going to follow through or do the thing? Like, come on. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. So,
yeah. I mean, and I think in general ordering and those kinds of things, I think a lot of it is so already organized within a lot of the electronic medical kind of charting and whatnot, mm-hmm. that things get checked off pretty easily and may not be something that gets revisited then, right?
Yeah. Actually, thinking about that electronic aspect of it, and this was something I brought up too, I didn't quite say it this way then, but I'm thinking to say it now. If you're a doctor and you have some dreams of your kid being a doctor, the way you're doing your job right now, you're making the profession, it's not going to work the same way. They are going to put a chatbot in charge of the medicine, and you're going to be a technician making the same dollar everybody else is making. So if you like your $300,000 a year and you want your kid to have it too, maybe do a job that makes us all think this is a profession that should keep going in this direction. Because right now it feels like you're being overpaid to give me an 8 A1C and have me out of here in my mid-50s. Like, that's how it feels if I have diabetes, right?
Well, and with the way that things are going, you know, with AI, quite honestly, there are going to be algorithms that now take some of that job out, right? At some point, there will be algorithms that evaluate glucose trends, that evaluate insulin pump data and give some feedback. And then at that point, like, you really do become kind of just a prescriber.
Yeah, you're a technician then. Right. Yeah. You're not a doctor anymore. You're the person that understands all the words enough to like point me in towards the right room where I got to pee and stuff like that.
And as somebody with diabetes myself, I would rather have a very personal conversation with a person and get their feedback. Sure. It would be lovely if a computer could just spit out, hey, I see these problems, fix this, change this, do this. That would be nice. But for some of those variables and things that you just can't teach personality to a computer.
No, it's starting to seem like you can't teach personality to a lot of physicians either. So, but I know being smart is tough, probably all a little like, you know, awkward and everything, but listen, I'm pretty smart and I've got a personality, like just try harder. I'm not saying I think computers should just become doctors. I'm saying that I think we're going to get forced in that direction because physicians aren't giving enough push back otherwise. They're not they feel like union people who are like, yeah, it's fine. We don't want to be in a union anymore. Like you want to hold on to your union or do you want it to go a different way? And I think you're right though. I think that moving it to a computer knowing the actual answer, but you still need it to come through a person. See, Jenny, that's another example of maybe that doesn't need to be a doctor. Maybe it needs to be an actual person who is good at connecting with human beings and understands the medicine just enough to be a bridge for that. You know, there's a guy on here one time, his name's Sam Fold. And Sam is the general manager of the Philadelphia Phillies.
Wow.
But he also played baseball for like 9 years professionally. But he also went to almost an Ivy League school for economics. So he was a very interesting and different blend of intelligent and baseball player. Mm-hmm. And the reason he's the general manager of the Phillies now is because the first job they gave him was to be a bridge between the analytics and the guy holding the bat.
Sure.
And now I'm not wondering if this isn't the same way this is going to go one day. Like we need, you know what I mean? We need a person down the middle who understands both sides. They don't need to be a 9-year trained physician to agree that ChatGPT got this one right or whatever that's going to happen in the future. And as crazy as that sounds to people, and Jenny knows that I'm doing this, but it's a very slow process and it's in the background. But the last thing I want to do with this podcast is leave behind a chatbot that has taught itself off of the entirety of the thousands of hours of the podcast. And I'm already having these amazing experiences where I'm just teaching it like the pro tip series. Mm-hmm. And by teaching, I mean, you're just feeding it into it. You're hard pressed to ask it a diabetes question it doesn't have a good answer to, just from learning, from listening to all of our conversations, you, me, and all the other people who come on here. It's really, really fascinating. Like, so I think I can leave something like that behind. If I can do that, I'm assuming a hospital can figure it out.
Of course.
Too. Yeah. So this is my last thought. I'm going to put it in this episode and let's talk it through for a couple of minutes and then we'll be on our merry way and thank everybody for listening to the Grand Rounds episodes, etc. While you and I were recording this, I jotted down in my notes, follow one patient a month to learn.
Oh.
And we didn't really go over it, but I found myself thinking that every doctor should just find one patient that has a glucose monitor and is interested in helping and say to them, hey, could I follow your CGM for a month? Could we text once in a while? I might text you and say, hey, tell me what just happened now when your blood sugar did this. Or did you just eat? It feels like you just ate. And, or, you know, I saw you ate, but you didn't get high. What happened here? Just a month. I swear to God, 1 month. I know nobody's going to do this. Somebody's going to tell me it's a HIPAA violation or some crap. I don't care. I'm telling you, if you followed one person a month and you did it for a year,
you would learn a lot.
You could be on this podcast next year, putting me to shame, talking about diabetes. So, and anybody, you would learn so much in just that one idea. And it's so doable. It's free. And it would take a limited amount of effort on the doctor's part and on a patient's part. And you all know one patient who's cool that you could approach about this. You know what I mean?
And it also teaches you an awful lot about the actual product, right?
Yeah, you might learn how it works.
You might actually learn some of the ins and outs of that particular CGM or some of the ins and outs of that particular pump and what you thought it would do. And then when you actually see it performing in the here and now, real time, you can say, well, God, that recommendation I've been giving was really not how this works. I haven't known
what the hell I'm talking about. I saw my daughter's graph today, just her graph. I looked at it and I thought, oh, she ran out of insulin. And it's her day off. It's her sleep-in day, right? Because this is her one day off a week from school. And I was like, there's no doubt in my mind she is asleep and she ran out of insulin. I knew in 15 minutes by looking at a graph. I called her up. I woke her up. I was like, hey, is your pump empty? And she goes, oh, thank you. And that was it. Just like that. I knew that from looking at a graph. And you'd be amazed at what you'd learn if you just followed along for a month.
Right.
And then let them go and then go pick somebody else. Eh, we'll do it with a kid. We'll talk to their mom. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I swear to God, in a year, you'd be a genius at this. And it wouldn't cost you anything. You wouldn't have to go to a meeting on a Saturday, like all the stuff that are here. Maybe you wouldn't feel so burned out, Jenny, if you were actually not helping people and not walking around all the time feeling like, oh, nobody listens to me and this sucks and why am I bothering? So I don't know. All sounds like common sense to me, but we'll see.
Oh, that's a common sense. You bring up something that many people are not utilizing much of these days. Sorry.
What do you think of this series? We have a couple minutes before you have to go. Did you enjoy making this? Do you think it?
Of course.
Do you think it hit the mark or do you think that doctors would listen to that and be like, don't bash me? Because they call it doctor bashing if you're critical of them.
Well, you know, and I think if you have an open mind that you would start listening to this to begin with, or you feel like you are missing something, I would expect that you're going to gain something out of this. Even if it's just one episode that really hit and you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And depending on what type of physician you are, you know, emergency department or, you know, specific, you know, specialty like endocrine or whatever it might be, I would have, again, my personality.
Yeah.
I would have been very, very excited to be able to hear something that I could have gotten something out of, even if it made me feel like, ah, I'm clearly not hitting the mark here. I can do better than this, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. I hope also that they heard that really, if you have a type 2 using insulin, it's enough of the same game that you could use a lot of the same concepts to help those people. Because you are going to hear some people say, well, type 1s are such a small portion of the population. I can't put that much effort into learning for this many people. But a lot of what you're going to know and help a type 1 with, you could help a type 2 with as well. And that's if mass appeal is your game, then, you know, there you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, until they start putting GLP into the water, I guess, which will be.
Personally, I really hope that I'll have to filter all my water.
Yeah, I know. I'm not advocating for that. What I actually think is, it's funny, I'm in between on that idea. I'm seeing GLPs help people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes all over the place. And I am for whatever makes you healthier. But at the same time, I think we're going to eventually do the thing where we skip over the value in this thing and then just start mass giving it out to everybody to try to avoid the problem to begin with, which is, I mean, maybe is a reasonable answer, but I don't know. It's so far in the future. It always scares me that when something's easy, we stop thinking about it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
No, anyway. Agreed. No, I think this series was, I think it was needed. And for whoever grabs it and really listens to it and can step back from an ego and say, I can get something from this. I don't agree with this, but I do agree with that. Or I can, you know, take something away from this. I think it was important.
I do too. My bigger hope and my more reasonable expectation is that we're hitting people who are younger and just in med school or thinking about going to med school. And maybe this is going to be a thing that helps the next generation of people. Maybe more than this, but I hope not. I hope everybody got something from it. Anyway, I always enjoy working with you and doing these things. So I can't thank you enough for helping me.
Oh, of course. You know, I always enjoy it as well. Thank you.
A huge thanks to Omnipod. Not just my longest sponsor, but my first one. Omnipod.com/juicebox. If you love the podcast and you love tubeless insulin pumps, this link is for you, omnipod.com/juicebox. I want to thank the Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the Juicebox Podcast. Learn more about its implantable sensor, smart transmitter, and terrific mobile application at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. Get the only implantable sensor for long-term wear. Get Eversense. If you're ready to level up your diabetes care, the Diabetes Pro Tip Series from the Juicebox Podcast focuses on simple strategies for living well with type 1. The Pro Tip episodes contain easy-to-understand concepts that will increase your knowledge of how insulin works, and so much more. My daughter has had an A1C between 5.2 and 6.4 since 2014 with zero diet restrictions, and some of those years include her in college. This information works for children, adults, and for the newly diagnosed, and for those who have been struggling for years. Go to juiceboxpodcast.com and click on Diabetes Pro Tip in the menu, or head over to episode 1000 of the Juicebox Podcast to get started today with the episode Newly Diagnosed, We're Starting Over. And then continue right on to episode 1025. That's the entire Pro Tip series, episode 1000 to 1025. If you or a loved one was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and you're looking for some fresh perspective, the Bold Beginnings series from the Juicebox Podcast is a terrific place to start. That series is with myself and Jenny Smith. Jenny is a CDCES, a registered dietitian, and a type 1 for over 35 years. And in the Bold Beginnings series, Jenny and I are going to answer the questions that most people have after a type 1 diabetes diagnosis. The series begins at episode 698 in your podcast player, or you can go to juiceboxpodcast.com and click on Bold Beginnings in the menu. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back soon with another episode of the Juicebox Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording, wrongwayrecording.com.